This is HPR episode 2170 entitled Soundtrap.io and is part of the series Interviews. It is hosted by Ken Fallon and is about 33 minutes long. The summary is a low-cost open source acoustic logger for biodiversity and environmental monitoring.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by anhonesthost.com. Get 15% discount on all shared hosting with the offer code HPR15. That's HPR15. Better web hosting that's honest and fair at anhonesthost.com.
Hi everybody, my name is Ken Fallon and you're listening to another episode of Hacker Public Radio. A while back, I put a blog post up on my website asking for an open source mosquito locator. One of the people put me in touch with David Zilli and about from the Hubbug project. And that was released as HPR 1894 back in 2015. As part of that, David recommended that I contact Alex Rogers, who is basically Alex. Can you tell us what you're doing?
So I'm a professor of computer science at University of Oxford, and I'm interested in acoustic monitoring for biodiversity and environmental monitoring. And one of the things we've been doing is building a open source acoustic logger, so a device that you can put in the environment that will record sounds. And the clever thing is we want to try and put some intelligence on the device, so have the device make decisions as to whether a particular sound is interesting and only make a recording if it is interesting.
What was the project called again?
The project's called Soundtrap.io.
And what's interesting by your definition?
So it depends on the application. So we've been doing some trial deployments this year looking for the New Forest cicada. So that's a very rare insect which only lives in the New Forest in the UK. And it sings at 15 kilohertz, which is probably outside of the range of most adults hearing. Children can still hear it, but the insect is actually very loud. But the challenge is that most people can't hear it. So what we've been doing is making devices that can automatically detect that frequency, recognize it as the song of the cicada, and make a recording if they hear that.
And you have made a open source hardware device. Why did you decide to do that and not just go with a smartphone or something?
Yeah, so we did for the previous 2 or 3 years, we've done a citizen science survey trying to get people to use smartphones. That has some challenges. You need people to go to particular areas at particular times. So I'm a big fan of using sort of citizen science and smartphones, but there are some applications where you'd like to be able to deploy things and record maybe overnight. So if you're looking for bats, recording overnight. If you're doing a long-term survey, you want to collect regular recordings from a particular place. So there's sort of a gap for a low-cost device that you can deploy and then come back and collect later on and collect the data from. So commercial devices in this space cost about £1,000, typically because it's just a very small market. So we wanted to make a open source, open hardware device so that we can exploit sort of online maker, so PCB assembly, and enable people to order these devices, assemble them, and use them themselves.
So there's a picture of this on your website. I wonder, could you give us a quick rundown of what it looks like?
Yeah. So it's about the size of a credit card. It's got, at the moment, we power them with three AAA batteries. So that's about the size of the device. So it's basically a single-sided printed circuit board that sits on top of a battery mount. We use a very small smartphone microphone, which is very sensitive. And we record to a micro SD card. And then the whole device is run by a very low power microcontroller. So there are a few sort of Raspberry Pi based approaches, but a microcontroller allows you to be much more energy efficient and have the device lasting much longer with very small battery pack.
How long will that last?
So for the Cicada deployment, we had the device waking up every 5 seconds. It listens for about 200 milliseconds, analyzes that sound, decides whether it wants to make a recording. And if it does, it then makes a 30-second recording. And the devices we deployed, we allowed them to make up to 50 recordings a day. And then so with the three AAA batteries, that device would last probably about 10 weeks.
Okay, that's actually pretty good. And I've seen here on your website that you put it in a plastic bag and just cable tied it to a tree.
Yeah, so the challenge with sort of small, low-volume manufacturing, it tends to be the enclosure. So it's typically very easy to outsource PCB manufacturing. So you can have PCB manufactured. You can have PCBs assembled. So they'll, there's lots of online companies which will take your plans, take your bill of materials, and just supply you back with completely assembled printed circuit boards. The challenge is typically how to get a low-cost enclosure. So in this case, we needed a waterproof enclosure, but also we needed sounds to be able to travel through the enclosure.
Yeah.
And it turns out that a cheap plastic bag is the easiest way to do that.
Fair enough, yeah. Can you tell me roughly what the cost of this would be?
Yeah, so we're going through some different revisions, and each revision we sort of try and take out some of the cost. But at the moment, we can probably, if you ordered 100 at a time, you could probably have them assembled for probably about £20 each.
Okay. So why would that be better than, say, like a Pi Zero, which is like a tenner?
So the challenge with the Pi Zero is really the power. So as soon as you're running an operating system, you're very limited in what you can do in terms of stopping the processor and going to sleep. So these microcontrollers allow you to, at any point in time, stop the processor, change the clock frequency of the processor. And also you can do lots of processing whilst you're actually asleep. So the processor stops, but we can still take samples from the microphone and pass them into memory, even with the processor clock actually stopped. So these microcontrollers are very much more energy efficient. So we're down to operating power is milliwatts, and then when you include all the duty cycles, your average consumption is less than 1 milliwatt.
Oh, that is that's quite impressive, actually.
Yeah, so that's really the challenge. So a battery powered device, the amount of energy you have in a battery is very limited, which is sort of why we have to charge up our mobile phones every day. So if you want something that you can deploy, you really need something that can operate on a very low duty cycle, just power down completely and then just wake up when it has to do something. And that's a challenge with any embedded system with an operating system, because you've got to wait for your Raspberry Pi to boot each time.
All right, devil's advocate here. Like, if I go down to the pawn shop, I can buy a one of these LED outdoor lights for a pound or so. Could you not just have a solar panel and a battery, just power up something like a Pi Zero and go that way? That would be cheaper.
But when you look at the cost of a sort of commercial a printed circuit board, having that assembled with a PV panel attached and a charger, all those components add up. It's often quite deceptive. You know, if you're going to be building something in runs of sort of 100 or 1,000, your costs are significantly more than a small Chinese manufacturer, which is turning out millions of solar-powered LED lights. So it's often sort of quite deceptive as the cost of something that you can just buy on the street and something that you're going to have assembled for a particular application. And the key thing is, if you're going to deploy 100 of them, you don't want to be spending a lot of time assembling them yourself, because that's a huge cost. You know, you can save a little bit of cost on the material, but if each one takes you half a day to put together, that's a huge cost that you have to bear. So the idea is that we're trying to look at solutions which you can just order. They come assembled, they're single PCBs. But that means that you're doing it in typically sort of small volumes. So you have to be careful about the the components that you can put on the device.
Yeah, I guess as well, the Pi doesn't have a microphone, nor does it have. You still have the power supply or the keeping it dry.
Yeah, I mean the Raspberry Pi is cheap because they made 10 million of them.
Yeah.
So you get good prices if you're going to build that many devices.
Yeah, true enough. So, do you need to set up beforehand when you're recording this what the type of species it is that you're going to want to listen to, or will it just work out of the box for anything?
So what we're looking at is sort of making it configurable. So the source code will be open, so anyone can you can do what you like with it. We want to try and provide some basic tools because many sort of ecologists and conservation biologists aren't going to be happy writing firmware for a device in C. So we're going to provide a sort of a basic configuration script which allows you to determine things like the sampling rate, what frequency you want to sample, what frequency you're particularly looking for in order to trigger the device. And we've been doing experiments with bats. So for the cicada, we sample at 48,000 samples a second, which is sort of like a CD quality recording. If you need to record bats, you need to be able to detect audio frequencies up to 80 kilohertz. So you need to sample much faster. So all of that needs to be sort of configurable, and that depends on what type of species you're looking for.
And then the recordings, what do you do with those?
So there's a growing sort of community sort of looking at doing automatic species recognition from audio recordings. So that means if you collect a recording, can you then, once you've got that data back, use more processing power to try and automatically label the recording, detect what birds are singing, what insects are singing. So that's quite a powerful way of deploying a device that can maybe wake up, record the dawn chorus, and then provide you with automatic analysis of what birds are singing. There's also a lot of interest in trying to measure more general things about the environment. So these are people developing acoustic indices. So these are sort of measures of the complexity of the sound, which might not tell you what species a bird is singing, but it will tell you, okay, there's bird song. And that would allow you to deploy these devices and get some measure of the biodiversity in the environment. And there's sort of interest in that space for things like monitoring the green roof. So many building regulations now stipulate that you should do something for biodiversity, and that often means having a green roof on the top of your building, having plants on the top. But there's no real sort of ongoing way of actually measuring whether that's having any impact. Are birds and insects actually coming and using that space? So this would provide a very low-cost way of monitoring that type of deployment and seeing whether it's actually having any impact.
What made you decide to do this open source?
So it's really as soon as you try and do something commercially in this space, because it's such a small marketplace, selling devices becomes very expensive. So if you look at the commercial devices that people sell, you know, they're perfectly competent electronics engineers and the firmware is great and the software support is great. But all of that development and support comes at a cost. And that typically means that any commercial device you sell in that space is going to be very expensive. So we're particularly interested in users who don't have the funding or don't have the capacity to go off and buy, you know, several tens of £1,000 commercial loggers. So we've been doing some work with some scientists in Kenya, where they're electrical engineers, they can assemble these things, but they don't have access to the funding that would enable them to go and buy the equivalent number of commercial devices. So it's really sort of exploiting all of that sort of online maker community, all the stuff around sort of Raspberry Pis and Arduinos to try and enable people to build their own devices.
And how do you, where are they, under what license is this for a start?
So this would just be completely open. So we're probably, what we're doing at the moment is we're on our sort of final revision of the hardware that we've so far kept closed, because we don't want to be changing things too quickly and having people using versions that we've decided we don't want to take forward. So the trial version that we're sort of finalizing at the moment That will be just as an MIT license, and you know, we don't mind what people use it for.
Oh, very good. And the idea would be I could make this like on a PCB, get the printer myself, or make it on a breadboard or something.
Yeah, so assembling it yourself is a little bit challenging, probably just because of the MEMS microphones that we use. I mean, it's perfectly possible. So I typically have order PCBs, and then I have a little pizza oven at home that I can use to as a reflow oven to solder the devices on. That tends to get a little bit fiddly, and if you're assembling a lot of them, it's often not worth it, because a lot of PCB manufacturers will offer assembly services as well. So you send them the Gerber files, which is sort of the standard for describing a printed circuit board. You send them your bill of materials, which are just the list of components, and they send you back the printed circuit board with all the components on it. And there's a number of sort of online services. So Circuit Hub is a very interesting one where you can post your bill of materials and your Gerber files, and then anyone can go to Circuit Hub and order those devices. Connected to Circuit Hub, there's another thing called Group Gets, which allows you to specify maybe you want a batch of 100 devices, and at that point it becomes quite cheap, but you can't find individual people who want to buy 100 of them. But Group Gets allows a group of people to come together, a bit like Kickstarter, where everyone orders a certain number, and when you get to that threshold, then the order is sent to Circuit Hub, and Group Gets will deal with the distribution.
Oh, so
these
fantastic.
These are really good ways of enabling individuals to get their devices out there without them actually having to be in the loop of ordering them and posting them off to people.
Okay, now the question you've been dreading: when is it going to be released?
Yeah, so we've got a final version that we're just sort of we've gone through a couple of iterations on the printed circuit board at the moment. We've changed the processor, so we've gone for a slightly more powerful processor, which we hope will give people a little bit more flexibility. And we've also increased the memory capacity of the device from the version that we've been using now. So our aim is probably for sort of January or February to have all of that up there, so that you can go to Group Gets and order it, or you can download all the files yourself and just assemble them yourself if that's what you want to do.
Oh, fantastic. So then you have this thing, you put it in your garden, you record, in my case, I want to record mosquitoes. Is there any way of getting the data off in a real-time fashion if that was what I wanted to do, or would it be better off just using a microphone?
Yeah, so we've been sort of, that's a thing that we'd like to try and address. It's challenging because audio files tend to be very big. A minute of audio uncompressed WAV file is probably about 6 megabytes, which is for a wireless network, you're going to use quite a lot of power trying to transmit that off the device. But it would be possible. So we have looked at maybe using Wi-Fi modules and having a device that you could put into your garden, which would stream the audio back. And I think if you're clever about making decisions about what data you actually want to transmit, then you can do it and have a reasonable energy consumption so that you don't need too big a battery pack to do that. There's some interesting Internet of Things radio protocols, which are low power, but they tend to be very low bandwidth as well. So audio has this challenge that it's the file sizes tend to be quite big. And that's often a challenge for ecologists and conservation biologists who are trying to do acoustic surveys, in the sense that they deploy these existing devices and they end up with terabytes of data, and there's a challenge, you know, there's a challenge for developing some tools there to enable you to look through terabytes of audio data and look for interesting signals within all of that data.
Yeah, they've done some work on that for the Graviton stuff, so.
Yeah, and so it's sort of we're quite interested in maybe doing some sort of garden citizen science type surveys, where people could upload the data, send it back to us. When we've looked at doing that, you begin to worry about people's upload speeds, even from their broadband networks. So often a SD card in the post is a faster, very effective way of transmitting data.
Yeah, IP over pigeon.
Yeah.
So there's also the whole physical thing of if you're doing this in a forest, you'd need to go around and gather these cards and update them and change the batteries. So there's like that sort of management function as well, I guess.
Yeah, so when we do the cicada survey, we deploy them and then come back after a month, check they're still running, take out the data and have a look at the data. That is a challenge. So one of the things that we're a parallel project that we're looking at is this is for forestry sort of protection in tropical countries. So we're working with some colleagues in Belize looking at can we detect gunshots and chainsaws in real time using acoustic sensors. And there what they need is some sort of alerting system. So there's a ranger station and what they'd like to have is a real-time alert that, okay, there's some gunshots, there seems to be some hunting happening in this part of the protected area. So there you can use these low-power broad-spectrum radio networks that are emerging for Internet of Things type applications, because there you're not really trying to send back all of the audio, you're just trying to send back an alert that, okay, I've detected something and I think it was a gunshot or I think it was a chainsaw.
Oh, very good. Like ideal one for one of those Internet of Things mesh wireless networks as well.
Yeah. So if you look at things like LoRa, you know, they, which is sort of a sort of emerging low bandwidth but long range, low power network in a tropical forest. We're going to try and do some trials next spring, but we'd expect to be able to transmit, you know, at least sort of 5 or 6 miles, maybe more. So that allows you to sort of form quite an effective network without having too many base stations or too many sort of booster stations.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. I can imagine in that sort of case some sort of seismic sensor or something might be also useful for, you know, bulldozers going past or that sort of thing. How easy is it to add and modify the board itself?
Yeah, so one of the things that we're sort of quite interested in doing is looking at how we can make the acoustic sensor into something that would sort of plug into a more modular type of sensing board. There are a few sort of Internet of Things sensing boards available, which are designed, maybe they provide a temperature measurement or an air quality measurement. What we'd like to try and do is sort of take some of the technology that we've developed on this board and actually turn it into a sort of a modular board that you could plug into some environmental sensing board. So then we'd make our device do all of its clever energy management. So deciding on when it should wake up, when it should be sleeping. But then actually just provide an alert back to this other board that maybe there's some interesting data that needs to be uploaded, or maybe there's just an alert that needs to be passed on. So that's the thing they'd be really keen to do. And certainly for the tropical forest setting, you know, we don't need to reinvent the wheel by doing all of the radio network and all the charging circuitry if we have solar panels on there. You know, there are existing sort of environmental sensor boards, but what we'd like to be able to do is make our acoustics an add-on for that type of device.
And what makes your board acoustic-wise so different from just having a regular old microphone and going like that?
So it's really just the fact that the audio goes straight into a microcontroller, and then sample by sample, we can analyze the sound at that level. So when we're looking for the cicada, basically, we use a thing called the Goetzel algorithm, which allows us to do a bit like a discrete fast Fourier transform. But rather than looking at every frequency, we can just measure the energy in a particular frequency band. So every time we get a sample from the microphone, so 48,000 times a second, we do a small calculation. We keep track of how much energy we've seen in that 14 kilohertz band. And then after a certain number of windows, we stop and say, okay, well, looking at that 200 milliseconds of sound that we processed, do we think there was something interesting in that? And should we make a recording? Or do we think that there's nothing of interest at the moment, so we can go back to sleep for another 5 seconds and then wake up and have a look a bit later? So the key thing is that because we've got this sort of microcontroller that's right down at the very low level, sample by sample, we can begin to make decisions as to whether the sound is interesting or whether we should record it or whether it's something that we should raise an alert about. And that's the sort of thing that you want to be able to do on your very low power device rather than sending all of that audio to a Raspberry Pi and having to power up the Raspberry Pi to make that decision.
Yeah, and that would be an awful lot of data going through all the time, 24/7, listening for everything and then having to process that. Okay.
Yeah, and it tends to be surprising things that take power. So writing to SD cards in our device is the most power-consuming activity. So the less we write to the SD card, the longer the batteries last. So listening and doing some computation is much more energy efficient than recording sound to an SD card, basically just because the current it takes to write to an SD card. So surprising things tend to use the energy. And as soon as you put a Wi-Fi network on there, typically, or a radio typically it's the radio network that then uses all the power.
But in order to repurpose the device, you would need to know beforehand what it is your target species or, you know, chainsaw is.
Yeah. So I mean, there is some scope for sort of doing reconfigurable hardware, and that's sort of a really sort of emerging area that's very interesting. So actually using an FPGA, so field programmable device, so that you can change the hardware to look for a particular device. So there's some really interesting sort of hobbyist boards emerging in that space. So there's a device called MyStorm, which allows you to connect a Raspberry Pi up to this field programmable gate array. And then you can program the device. So you're programming the hardware. And so you could program the hardware to look for a particular frequency and then have the hardware, very energy efficient hardware doing that, as opposed to your microprocessor doing that.
So how then do you set the frequencies that you're interested in on your device? Is that set one time and done?
So it's in the firmware of the device. So it's all software on the microcontroller. So basically the microcontroller determines what the frequency rate that you sample from the microphone is. And then the code that we write that runs on the microcontroller does the analysis and makes that decision. So that's all changeable, but you need to be able to, if you wanted to make radical changes to that beyond the configurable stuff that we put into the existing firmware, you need to be comfortable writing C and changing the firmware on the device. But people who are playing with Arduinos are doing that type of coding all the time. You're writing C that's going to run on a microcontroller.
Yeah, but I'm thinking for a forest, if this year they're interested in one thing that they can gather up the devices at the end of the year, reprogram them and redeploy them next year for some other project.
Yeah, so the key thing is that you don't have to change the hardware. It's just reflashing them, updating the software. Gotcha. And you can do that through the USB port. So all these devices typically have a bootloader. So the device has a USB port that we use to configure it, to tell it what the time is, when it should be making recordings. But you can also use that port to update the software on the microcontroller.
Okay, very cool. Did you actually find any cicadas this year?
No, we didn't. But that doesn't mean it's not there. So we've been looking for sort of four years now. So it is the only site in the UK where it's ever been recorded. No one has recorded there's been no confirmed sighting since about 1992. So there was a possibility of a sighting around 2000. But it has disappeared for significant amounts of time in the past as well. So last time it was sort of rediscovered around the 60s, it hadn't been seen for 40 years. So the best sort of advice is that there are likely to be colonies somewhere in the New Forest, but we just don't know where they are yet.
Very good. And what other projects are in the pipeline for this?
So bats are very interesting. So we're keen to try and produce a device, hopefully just using the standard device that we've got, that can be used for a sort of a citizen science bat survey. So we've been talking with a colleague, Professor Kate Jones at UCL, who's probably the leading person in terms of using devices for monitoring bat populations. And we're working with her to sort of try and sort of see what we'd need to do a large scale citizen science bat survey using these types of devices.
And what would the plan be there? Ship the devices out to people, or?
Yeah, so one of the interesting things I've in previous projects I've used the mail as a way of distributing devices. So you people sign up on a web page, they are sent the device by post. They can deploy it for a certain amount of time and then just send the device back to you. And that allows you to recycle the devices and with a limited number of devices do quite a sort of a large scale deployment. So that's sort of quite an interesting model that we probably want to try and sort of exploit in this case,
and also get over the data transfer.
Yeah. So what we haven't really tried yet is sort of what would be the typical sort of amount of data that we'd end up with from a useful survey. So there's some work to do to sort of figure out where you'd want to do these surveys, what would be a useful amount of time to get some meaningful data, and then look at how many gigabytes of data that is, and then sort of see, okay, well, how willing would people be to use their home broadband to upload that much data, and how long would it take? Because, you know, typically we get these sort of 10 megabit per second deals, but that's download, and the upload speed is very much less than that.
Yeah.
So it may well be that post and just sending your SD card back with the device by post is not only easier for people, but faster as well.
Yeah, and more efficient and less chance of it breaking halfway through.
Yeah. I mean, and certainly sort of, you know, if it's going to take you a day to upload the data, that's your you know, a desktop or a laptop tied up for the day. So compared to just putting it in an envelope and posting it back, it may well be the least... the least time consuming thing to do.
Yeah, and there's quite a lot of limits on the UK, so as well, most people have bandwidth limits.
Yes, so it's sort of, it's, I mean, it's quite sort of a it's a bit disappointing in this world of digital technology that actually mailing SD cards turns out to be the most efficient way of sending data backwards and forwards, but that may be how it is for a while.
Yeah, true for you. So any other stuff that we missed in the interview or that we should be covering?
No, I think that was pretty comprehensive.
So what's your plan when you release the devices themselves? Are you going to update the webpage? Where's the best place that we can keep track of what's going on?
Yeah, so if you keep track of the soundtrap.io website, and what we'll do is we'll refresh our website when we release the device, but then we'll also sort of link to GitHub where we host all the code, and CircuitHub where you'll be able to order devices from and group gets as well. So that would be the sort of first place to look, but we would then link off to these sort of standard places where people can access all of the extra information.
So will you be also supplying the firmware?
This is
the bat firmware. This is the mosquito firmware. This is the...
Yeah, so we'll the first version of the firmware will be a scheduled recorder, so with the option of triggering on particular frequencies. So by default, you'll be able to configure your device to wake up at 6 a.m. every morning and record for 3 hours if you want to, say, to capture the dawn chorus, or you wanted to deploy it at night and only make recordings if it detects a significant signal at 860 kilohertz, something like that.
Yes. Okay, so that is that's pretty much it from me. What we will do is we'll keep an eye on the website here, and as soon as you're going live, we'll make an announcement on the community news for all the shows that we do once a month, alerting our listeners to the device being on board.
Okay, that's great.
Perfect. Thank you very much for taking the time. Sorry it took so long to organize. And
okay.
Good luck with the project in the future.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Okay, folks, tune in tomorrow for another exciting episode of Hacker Public Radio.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the binary revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.